Good. I'd like to ask for your attention. These four forms of universal empathy. I'd like you to recall, to think of these qualities as, on one level, they are an expression of our non-separate nature. That means we are connected. We need connection to survive. We need connection to grow. We need connection to develop. Human beings become human beings through other human beings. That is a very clear way, beautiful South African proverb says that very clearly. We become what we are through others. If you consider for a moment what you have learned from others and through others and with others, and if you try to subtract what is truly your own effort without example, without help, without learning by example or learning from teaching, you probably agree with me that there isn't that much left, you know, that we do absolutely on our own, figure out on our own, develop on our own. So it's these qualities for Brahmaviharas are relational quality, and so is mindfulness. The key element of mindfulness is not clinically neutral, observant, satellite, position, hovering, helicoptering over all of your experience. The key experience of mindfulness is that it is relational. It is both the willingness and the capacity to relate to an event, a process, a person, something that takes place. So the Brahmaviharas and mindfulness have a profound connection. Not just is one aspect of mindfulness the fact that it is infused by at least one of these Brahmaviharas to go beyond mere attention. Also, the relational nature of both the Brahmaviharas and mindfulness is shared by all of these qualities. Let's look at some of the terms. Maitri, metta, basically means friendliness. Of the Greek notions of love, it's probably closest to agape. Yeah? It's not eros, and it's not philia either, but it's probably closest to agape. The friendly aspect, the warmth of it, the specificity of it. It's not general, it's not generic. It is going to something very specific, but it goes to a part of someone who is both personal and yet completely universal. That's the strange thing about it. If you are in a state of metta for someone, you are both in touch with that person, with the particularity of that person, with his or her traits, with his or her state, with his or her peculiarity. But it is also directed towards something completely transpersonal in that human being. We all appreciate that quality if it is directed towards us. We learn better if we are in a climate of affectionate well-wishing. The benevolence of the gestures that are directed to us, we love that. Something in us is invited. We feel, generally we respond with trust to that. Often we respond to with a deepening of our own sense of what's actually happening when somebody with that quality meets us or addresses us. This is the sort of thing you may know from your own experience, if a friend asks you how you're doing, and you sense that behind that question is a genuine interest. It's not just a rhetorical "how do you do." It's actually what's happening for you. Tell me something about the place where you are currently speaking from. And often that attitude is profoundly enabling. It enables us to actually be in touch with a part. We may on a level have felt before that, but we haven't actually consciously felt. So sometimes it is such a question and such an attitude when somebody offers us this that enables us to deepen into the felt quality of our experience. Yeah. That's what works in therapy. That's what works in friendship. That's what works if somebody really is genuinely interested in our well-being and inquires, what is taking place for us. It helps us to actually feel that place better where we're in. You often have that. You ask somebody, how are you doing? And they start crying. Yeah. And they weren't particularly better. I didn't make them feel bad. They felt what they feel for quite a while, but it wasn't allowed to actually open. It was there, maybe like a tight bud. And when I ask the question, the tight bud is allowed to open a little bit. Yeah. On one level, this is a relief. On another level, it becomes more consciously felt. This is what metta does to all of us. We all, irrespective of your particular preferences, personality styles, we all have a very clearly and documented way that when we are in an environment of trust, in an environment of friendliness, we relax better, we sleep better, we learn better, we are more creative. Yeah? We're more whole. That is what metta is at the bottom. Now, we tend to reserve that for people we like, for people who behave. Not just behave generally, but behave in ways we like. And then we reward them with that quality. Yeah? We withhold that quality for people who do not meet our expectations, or for people who are not close, who are not part of our family, our religion, our ethnicity. Sorry. No smiles for non-Buddhists, We do that, but we're selective. Most of us do that in some way, but we're quite selective where and with whom. No human beings, just my dog. Yeah. And you probably agree with me that we could do better on this one. There's a selectiveness and a kind of exclusiveness that we impose on the development of this quality that is not nature. There's no law which says you can only do that with three people, or it decreases in value if you do that with more people. Friendliness does not decrease in value. Sexual love is very difficult after a certain number is trespassed, that becomes very difficult and not it is devalued and it is a logistic nightmare and it is is going to have impacts on the trust levels in your life. But friendliness is not devalued by when you're friendly to many people. Some of the most impressive people I've seen are friendly with children, with old farm ladies, with snooty students, with demanding and obstreperous visitors. So, and just equal measure of friendliness. That has been truly impressive. It's easy to be friendly with the folks you like, and your chums, but being friendly with more people than just your chums is not so easy. So we have limits. We feel there's a strain there. Or I'm not friendly to people I don't have to be friendly with. Yeah. There are some people who say, well, this is my sign of being authentic. I'm not. If I don't depend on you, if I don't owe you money or favors, I don't need friendliness. Yeah. I'm not friendly with people. I'm aloofish, disapproving, and unfriendly. That gives me power. That gives me a sense of independence. Some of us are like that. Metta as a quality has a profound impact on what's happening, not just on the receiving end, when I am actually experiencing metta from somebody else, but it has also a powerfully transformative quality on the giving end. And careful, it's not some kind of a bland, serene, distancing type of frontal smile, a kind of sort of a robotic grin, you know, concreted into your face and with which you hold the world at elbow length. This is not what I mean. It is a quality of heart. It's not a sales strategy or not even a Buddhist soft sell or so. It does something here and it does something where it lands. Here it makes a soft, still space. It is receiving, it is not frightened. It is welcoming and it is specific. Yeah. It picks up what it meets. At the receiving end, it's lovely, it feels spacious, it feels, I want to go there, I want to be let in, I want to be, bring it on, yeah, this is the feeling. It allows me to unravel, it allows me to open, it allows me to be less defended. And this doesn't just take place in between human beings, obviously. This is where we hopefully have experienced this and where you practice this. But it also is possible to practice metta with the pain, for example. You can have metta with the unpleasantness of a knee pain. You can have metta with the knee who holds the pain. You can have metta with the mind that is prone to aversion against unpleasant knee pains. You can have metta to the entire human conundrum at that moment, you know, this being in pain, struggling with the pain, knowing it doesn't work, having to accept, not being able to change. It can only grow bigger rather than fix something. So metta is if you grow bigger about, if you grow bigger and if you welcome it in. It's a powerful, powerful gesture of mind. Acts of metta can be done intentionally. That's where it all begins. Acts of metta can be done verbally. Acts of metta can be done physically. It's not just a mental attitude. Obviously, for meditators, it means I allow. Yeah, that's the great thing. That's the great statement. I allow this to happen. I give permission for chainsaws, knee pains, sneezing neighbors, shuffling people, the nylon trousers which come in right now. You know, I give permission for this to be. It is that attitude, and in that attitude, something softens. It doesn't become necessarily sweet, but something softens. The receptacle of experience, the receptacle of the events taking place in my mind becomes softer. Not necessarily blurry, but it's just I am less contracted. If you think of much of personality forces, much of, that's my current understanding of things, so don't take that too serious, or at least take it with a pinch of salt. I'm not awakened, so you better be on your guard on this one. But my current understanding is that much of our personality construct is a recoil from pain. It is a contraction away from things that are creating pain. Later, this contraction not just happens with pain, but it also happens when the first sign of something that reminds us of pain occurs. Yeah? So I almost preemptively contract before it actually gets painful. And so I end up building a notion of self, and that implies how I contact people, how I trust, how I negotiate needs, how I negotiate others' needs. Yeah? All that complex social, relational, and intrapersonal structures I develop around safeguarding this being here from pain. Yeah. Personality as a defense structure against the possibility of pain I either have experienced or I have been threatened to experience. Yeah. So you have... you build your little personality fortress around a notion of pain that may occur, and you prepare yourself against this, or you try to prevent it, or you try to, you know, to pad up, you know, at the simplest level. And metta does the opposite. It doesn't do pad up. It doesn't do fortifying. It doesn't do contraction. It opens, it widens, and that has dramatic effect on our well-being. It has a dramatic effect on our immune system. It has a dramatic effect on our capacity to connect with others. It has a dramatic effect on picking up signals from other places, and obviously it has a dramatic effect on stillness. That's one of the reasons why Buddhist meditators, it's no secret that people who have access to metta in their own hearts find it a lot easier to have a still mind. In fact, it's a part of meditative exercise to be able to make your mind happy, to make yourself glad. That's the word, glad, to gladden your own mind. There are little exercises like thinking of your past virtues. If you have to think about your past, if you have to ruminate autobiographically, ruminate about your virtues rather than about your hang-ups or your missed opportunities or your debts. So we all know that we have an evolutionary bias towards negative perceptions, which we hold more real. We give them more credibility. We remember them better. Makes sense. Makes perfect sense, yeah? If we eat bad mushrooms, we survived the experience, we're going to remember what that kind of mushroom was. We're going to tell our kids. We're going to tell our friends. Stay away from that mushroom. Looks great. Tastes fantastic. But you get in trouble. So it makes sense that this negative experience is passed on. And one way of making sure that it's passed on is having it indelibly marked in our memory. Evolutionarily, this makes perfect sense. If you want to be happy, this doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to remember the bad things in our life better than the good things. Yeah? But we are geared toward that. Yeah? The jargon for this is negative perceptual bias. It's amply researched. So, what we need to do is to affirm and strengthen the appreciative bit in our life. We need to lengthen that experience, and we need to deepen that experience so that it makes it from the short-term memory to the long-term memory. Because the pattern says bad bits stay longer. That means over the period of some time, the bad bits seem to be more real because they're more easily recalled. That means you have, when looking back, more bad bits easily available than good bits. All the good mushrooms you've forgotten, yeah? It's straightforward. Yeah? This is not rocket science, but this is just how we are geared. So if we want to practice, and if we want to have a better chance at contentment and clarity and all the other awakening factors, we need to know how we are geared. We need to know our spin, yeah? The spin of our particular system. So metta is one way how we can counteract that. Metta makes us more appreciative, makes us more caring, makes us more aware makes us more loving, basically. Because we let in, because we allow, because we're less afraid, because we connect more. Good. I'd like you to pair up and spend 3 minutes each recalling an incident in your life where you have been completely surprised by somebody's kindness, or where you have been touched by somebody's kindness. Deeply touched, deeply surprised. Or both. Wonderful. If both, but either will do. Yeah? Do you pair up 3 minutes each? I'll ring a bell a minute before it ends. Yeah?